Hello, happy Sunday and happy spring. Welcome to this April 11th edition of The Rewind, your Sunday news magazine. I'm your host, Robert Kaplan. On today's episode, strings of lights illuminate campus at dark, why they're there, and if they'll stay in the second half of today's episode. Also, we take a tour of different buildings' histories on campus. But first, a conversation with executive news editor Maddie Aitken, highlighting the top news of the week from the Tufts Daily. Hello, Maddie. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Let's get to it. So we're going to talk about your top five picks from the news this week. What are they? Let's get started.
So the first one is about Ben Downing, who is an alum of Tufts as well as a former adjunct professor here. He's running for governor of Massachusetts. And then the next one is about the Carmichael Dining Center. It was just announced that it's going to be rebranded into a gluten, peanut, and tree nut free establishment. So that'll be a big change for sure. And then TUPD has committed to update their website to increase transparency, which was one of the workstream recommendations. And Milo Koretsky is assuming the McDonald Family Bridge professorship, which is exciting. And Professor Brian Schaffner has conducted policing surveys in Medford and Somerville, and the reports for those have just come out.
Excellent. Well, let's start at the top. Tell me about Ben Downing, the run for governor.
Yeah, so he graduated from Tufts in 2008 with a master's degree in urban and environmental policy and planning. And he taught a class here every spring between 2016 and 2020 called Massachusetts State Government, Learning While Doing, and that was in the political science department. And now he's launched his run for governor, which is pretty exciting. And he's pretty left-leaning. He talked a lot about wage inequity, tax reform, rebuilding infrastructure, exciting things like that. And he seems to have a really well thought out plan. He also talked about how his platform could benefit college students in Massachusetts, which is exciting from a tough specific perspective, talking about housing reform and transportation, which is exciting. And as of now, there's not a ton of information about the race for governor because the current governor, Charlie Baker, has not announced yet whether he will run for re-election or not. But this was a great article to kind of hear more about Ben Downing, who he is and what he hopes to do if he were to be elected.
What sort of legislative background does Downing have? He was in the state Senate, is that right?
Yes. So he graduated from college at Providence College in 2003, and he was working for former Representative John Oliver, who is actually also a Tufts alum, representing Massachusetts' first district in the U.S. House of Representatives. And then he came back here, did grad school, and then he ran for the Mass State Senate at 24 years old, which is pretty young. And he is from Massachusetts, so he talks a lot about sort of wanting to like give back to his community. And yeah, he's spent over 10 years in the state Senate.
Sure. Who knows what the future holds? We'll have to follow the race. Shifting on to campus developments, tell me about Carmichael Dining Hall.
Yeah, so Carmichael Dining Hall will be officially converted into a gluten, peanut, and tree nut free facility, and this will be launched in fall 2021, so right at the beginning of the next school year, which is really exciting news. I mean, this is a huge change because Carmichael and Duick are the main dining centers on campus, and they mostly fill the same role of just having general food in a traditional dining hall. But Tufts Dining has said that it's going to operate more like Hodge. So it's going to be like much more individually priced items, meal deals, making your own, a lot more like personal selection going on.
Sure. A couple follow-ups here. What's traditionally, Carm and Duick have been relatively equal traditional dining halls, but now that dynamic has completely changed. How do people with food allergies feel up with this versus those who don't?
Well, I would say that students with food allergies, especially if they're peanut, tree nut, or gluten-free, are really excited about this. A sophomore named Maddie Yost was interviewed for the article who has a gluten allergy, and she really talked about how it's been difficult, especially among the pandemic with the mobile ordering system, to know what's in your food and what you're going to get. I think a lot of people think that this is overdue, especially for students that have been dealing with the dining halls for the past 2 years and now are moving off campus, for instance. I feel like in terms of the general student body, I mean, there's been some traction in the Facebook meme group about how this is single-handedly ending the debate between Carm and Duick, things like that. But I do think that once this comes to fruition, I think students will actually enjoy it more than they think that they will, even if they don't have allergies, because as Yost pointed out in the article, a lot of times you're eating not gluten and you don't realize it.
What were, before the expansion of, or this remodel of Carmichael Dining Hall, what were the existing options for allergen-free food?
Well, there's the All Nine Free section in Duick, which was established at the beginning of last year, so the 2019-20 school year, which is all that food is free of the top nine allergens as listed by the FDA, which include obviously peanuts, tree nuts, and gluten. And in addition, for students with really severe allergies or anxiety around eating due to allergies, they can place alternate orders that can be cooked especially for them. But I would say in terms of like general students, like other than All Nine Free, there really isn't much.
Okay, fair answer. The next pick of yours from the week was about the police department's website.
Yes. So back in July, President Monaco launched an initiative about making Tufts an actively anti-racist institution. And part of that was setting up these five work streams that spanned a few different areas. One of them, campus safety and policing, focuses around TUPD mostly. Each work stream released a pretty thorough report that had recommendations as well as kind of their processes and just more information about how they arrived at the recommendations that they were arriving at. And so for the campus safety and policing work stream specifically, the report included 17 different recommendations across five main categories, and the digital communication recommendation specifically was calling on TUPD to increase transparency, accountability, and community engagement through its digital presence, which is mostly its website as well as some social media. So TUPD is responding to this. They are working on updating their digital strategy. It really seems like TUPD, specifically the interim director of public safety and the chief of police, Chip Coletta, is really open to this change. And he noted that, you know, the recommendations in the work stream, they're different, and some of them will take years of development, and some of them are really easy changes, and this is one of those easy changes. And so we talked about how they're sort of acting on this as like a solid first step to get them going.
So what's the goal here? Is it transparency? Is it community outreach or other? And what does that the actual concrete step look like as the website gets updated?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. So the idea is really to make the department's priorities and operations more available to the Tufts community at large. And I think that they really want to have the ability to take complaints and to kind of hear from the community if they want to air grievances, to kind of give them a platform to do so, whether those are against officers or other people in the community, so that TUPD can look into them. And I think that that sort of opens a two-way communication in a way that perhaps wasn't there before.
Sure. You said some of these features may take years to fully roll out. What's the timeline on this update to the website?
This timeline is 2 to 3 months, according to Coletta.
Okay. What about community stakeholders in the among the university community, like Tufts Action Group? What are responses to this change?
Yeah, absolutely. So the writer of this article actually spoke with Hope Freeman, who is a member of the steering committee of Tufts Action Group. She's also the director of the LGBT Center and the interim director of the Women's Center. And she also worked on the work stream. So she's super knowledgeable in this area. And she talked about how she thinks that this is a good first step. Obviously, it's not everything that they want to see done, but she said that this is an opportunity for Tufts as a community to be able to hear the recommendations that are offered in the report and kind of see them come to fruition. And she thinks that it is an important first step to kind of demonstrate to the community that TUPD is recognizing these recommendations and is taking them to heart thus far, at least.
Right. So moving on, tell me, who is Professor Koretsky? What's going on?
Yeah, so back in 2017, there was this professorship founded called the McDonald Family Bridge Professorship. And the idea behind that is that it puts a faculty member who is really knowledgeable in the fields of science, technology, engineering, or mathematics, as well as in education, into that position to kind of allow them to straddle both the School of Arts and Sciences and the School of Engineering and kind of have a foot in each and sort of bridge the two. So Koretsky is coming in as the inaugural professor. He was announced this past December as the appointee, and he will be starting the position this month. And he will teach in both the Department of Chemical and Biological Engineering, as well as the Department of Education. And he is coming from Ohio State University, where he has been for about 30 years in their Department of Chemical, Biological, and Environmental Engineering. And he's has a lot of very impressive accolades. And I think that everyone sees him as a really positive addition to the Tufts community.
Right. And in other professorial news, there's Brian Schaffner and policing surveys in Medford and Somerville. Is that right?
Yes. So Brian Schaffner is the Newhouse Professor of Civic Studies. He teaches in the Civic Studies and Political Science departments, and he conducted surveys last October and November polling Medford and Somerville residents on their experience and perception of policing in the towns that they live in, as well as kind of their opinions on reform for the future. And the survey results were released in March. And the main finding is that residents of both cities are somewhat satisfied with policing, but they recognize inequalities in how different populations are treated by the police, and they very much support the creation of a civilian review board in both towns.
What was the process of the survey in the communities? How was the outreach worked, and who was involved?
Yeah, so the research team actually included 8 undergrad students, which is really cool. It was sponsored by, the project was sponsored by the Tisch College of Civic Life, and the author of this article spoke with one of the students that was involved in the survey and was also a co-author on the reports, and she explained that they were involved with coming up with the questions for the survey and then helping to distribute the survey, as well as being involved with the analysis of the results that came after. She said that to generate the questions, they did research on top trends and saw what other surveys have been looking into. And then they divided up the group into different teams for specific issues and kind of went from there.
Is there any official progress in Medford or Somerville on establishing a civilian review board for police?
It seems like it's getting there. So Schaffner said that the goal of the surveys was to really inform local officials of opinions on these issues. And he said that there's not a lot of systematic data in terms of policing on such local level, small communities. So that was sort of the hole that he was trying to fill there. And he said that these survey results have reached city government officials. And so far, it seems like there's a good chance that both governments are seeing this report and are paying attention to it. So there hasn't been any concrete developments, but he does feel like they will be coming in the future.
Anything else that you think we should know?
I don't think so. I mean, there's a lot of exciting developments going on, both on campus and off campus, and hopefully this will inspire you to read the news.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much for being here, Maddie. This has been lovely.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Robert.
The Somerville City Councilor in June 2020 approved a resolution which called for a civilian review board for the Somerville Police Department. The issue is now being considered in a legislative committee, which began discussing the issue in public forums at the end of last month. Nightlife at Tufts is a little brighter thanks to a host of lights installed on the academic quad and Pres Lawn. Nicole Garay has the story.
Last semester, decorative lights were hung around the Tufts campus in hope that they would improve the on-campus experience and encourage students to spend time outdoors in the evenings. Gretchen von Grossman, Director of Capital Programs at Tufts, spoke on how the light installation project first came about.
Last fall, representatives from dining and student affairs voiced concern because the days were getting shorter and the nights were getting cooler. And was there any way to help students feel more comfortable outdoors in the evenings? We considered a range of options, and quickly, outdoor lights rose to the top and became a priority because they were likely to be beautiful, easy to implement, and cost-effective.
Along with the solar-powered light installed on trees throughout campus, the three main locations where lights were installed were Bendetson Hall, the Mayor Campus Center, and Alex's Place, which is located on the roof of Tisch Library. Von Grossman said that these locations were chosen because people tend to gather in these spaces and because they have access to power sources.
We looked for locations on campus where there were existing structures and access to power that could support the lights, and also paved plazas that could be shoveled to accommodate relocated Adirondack chairs for seating. We also looked for locations where people would naturally gather, such as Alex's Place and Campus Center, and spaces for outdoor dining like Campus Center, and we wanted to reinforce those spaces. Finally, we narrowed down the options for a three-location pilot, and we looked at the relationship between spaces on the landscape, and it felt like there was a nice connection between Bendetson and Alex's Place and Campus Center and Alex's Place, so those three seemed like a good first step.
According to Von Grossman, Student Affairs has received positive feedback from students about the lights.
Student Affairs has heard from some students that they like the lights, and I've had the opportunity to hear from a few students, staff, and faculty that the lights make a real difference on campus walks after sunset, that they are festive, warm, and welcoming.
Dan Nguyen, a first-year student, thinks the lights make the campus more lively, especially late at night when fewer people are out.
I personally believe that the lights added throughout the campus, such as the ones in front of Campus Center in Bendetson Hall and on Prez Lawn, really add a feeling of livelihood to the campus, even if there's no people around. For example, when I go back to my residential hall, Miller, from Tisch when they close at 1 a.m., and sometimes I go alone, I see the lights at Bendetson Hall, and it gives me this feeling that the campus is still lively, even though there's no people there.
Tufts sophomore Mia linked the lights to metaphorically lighting up the hill, but also expressed concern about the installment's contribution to light pollution.
The first thing you get about the lights on campus is that they're really, really bright, and they're very illuminating, and I think that lends itself to, like, the whole thing of, like, lighting up on the hill and, like, Tufts' whole thing of, like, you know, light the way for people and lighting up people's lives and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's cool and all, but it makes me wonder if there's so, like, there's, I know there's a thing called, like, light pollution. And I do think that having all these lights on, both figuratively and literally, contribute to light pollution. And I think it contributes to this, like, desperate need for everything to be light, 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 light.
According to Von Grossman, the lights will remain up indefinitely so students can continue to enjoy lit up outdoor areas at night. For The Rewind, I'm Nicole Garay.
In the news this week, the university on March 22nd announced the establishment of two bias education and resource teams. The team's scope includes addressing the impacts of acts of hate and bias on campus by providing supports to the Tufts community. According to Rob Mack, who is Associate Provost and Chief Diversity Officer for the Medford and SMFA campuses, the team's primary function is to, quote, provide education and resources to support our community after an event has taken place. Although they may engage in proactive programming as well. Mack is chairing the Bias Education and Resource Team for the Medford and Somerville campus. Action and Jumbo Vote are hosting a joint panel discussing community organizing and advocacy in Somerville, Medford, and Cambridge on Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Speakers include leaders from Defund Somerville Police Department, the Welcome Project, Community Action Agency of Somerville, and the Medford Council on Aging. To join the event, visit tufts.presence.io and sign on to the Zoom through Tufts. Tisch College is hosting New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy and Congressman Josh Gottheimer, a Democrat also from New Jersey, as part of its Distinguished Speaker Series. Congressman Gottheimer is co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus in the United States Congress, which was created in 2017 with the goal of finding common ground key issues facing the country. Congressman Gottheimer will speak on Thursday at 4:30, and Governor Murphy will speak on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Registration is required. This week's Food Truck Friday will include the Bacon Truck and the Shishkaberry Food Truck. The event is open to in-person undergraduate students who can select a free food item from one of the food trucks. Food Truck Friday spans from noon to 2 p.m. on Friday. The Daily Features section launched a history project early this semester, focusing on the timelines and key events for different buildings on campus. Producer Ryan Schaefer and features writer Ari Navetta take a tour of campus.
The Tufts Daily's Features section has launched a series of articles on the history of Tufts buildings. Ari Navetta, features writer for the series, shared some of this history in an interview for The Rewind, starting with Carmichael Hall.
So CARM is located on what we call Res Quad, which most people think is short for residential quad, since there's those three dorms there. It's actually short for Reservoir. So that whole area where CARM, Miller, and Houston, and Olin now are, was originally a reservoir built in the 1860s as an emergency water supply for Charlestown, which had just had a huge fire and needed the extra support. That area was bought by Tufts in the 40s and then leveled completely in 1947.
Carmichael Hall was built in 1953 and is named after Tufts' seventh president, Leonard Carmichael. Leonard Carmichael graduated from Tufts in 1921 and served as president from 1938 to 1953 when he left to become secretary of the Smithsonian Institute. Navetta said, Leonard Carmichael's family has a deep connection to Tufts.
He actually had a long line of history with Tufts. His grandfather had been involved in fundraising for Tufts in its very early days, like before it was even a thing. And his parents actually got married in Goddard Chapel.
Built in 1953, Carmichael Hall was the first men's dormitory constructed at Tufts in 25 years. With the capacity to house up to 285 students, Carmichael Hall was intended to house students in the Navy and Air Force ROTC programs. Navetta says the dorm's central feature is the spire.
The spire at CARM, which is 75 feet above ground, was built to be kind of that light on the Tufts Hill that you hear about so much.
After Carmichael Hall, Navetta shared the brief history of Lane Hall. Lane Hall currently houses the Department of Earth and Ocean Sciences.
And what's cool about Lane, well, among other things, is that it houses literally thousands of different specimens, including 3,000 fossils, 4,000 minerals, and another 3,000 different rock specimens.
Lane Hall was built in 1959 to serve as the home for Tufts' Booth Boston School of Occupational Therapy and Physical Education. The school was founded in 1918, and only women with a secondary school education were admitted. The school is no longer operational, and 1968 was the last year a student received a Tufts degree from the school. Navetta says Lane Hall is home to another unique feature, a geothermal well used to heat and cool one of the building's classrooms.
The project began in 2008 just as a way for geology and engineering students to study groundwater and drilling wells and all that. And then 4 years later, Professor Grant Garvin proposed using some of these wells to power Lane. At the time, there were ideas of drilling new wells to heat and cool more buildings on campus, but that has not happened. So the sole geothermal well we have on campus is located right next to Lane Hall.
Moving on, Navetta says Minor Hall serves as a window into Tufts' universalist roots.
It was originally the home of the Tufts Theology School. Tufts was founded as a universalist institution, and it served that purpose for most of its 99 years.
The Tufts School of Divinity, later named the Crane School of Theology, was founded in 1869 and closed in 1968. For most of its existence, the school was affected by an inadequate endowment and low enrollment. Page Hall, which is next door to Minor, was constructed as a dormitory for theology students. Navetta said Minor Hall served many functions over the years. Briefly, before World War I, Minor housed the entirety of Jackson College. Then, with the outbreak of the First World War, Tufts handed the building over to the U.S. to house and train enlisted men. During World War II, Tufts lent Minor Hall again.
Tufts served as a training center for pilots, Navy Corps, and engineers, and offered a number of certification programs for different engineering fields. An area of rough terrain near the gym became an obstacle or commando course for the rigorous physical regimen of the naval students, and the various playing fields and tennis courts and golf courses were thronged with classes in calisthenics and related activities. Jackson's students were busy with extracurricular war courses, which included Red Cross first aid, air raid precautions, and motor transport. So Tufts really dove into the war effort, and Minor Hall is a great way to learn about that.
Located just across from Minor Hall is Eaton Hall. Eaton Hall was originally constructed to serve as a library with funds provided by Andrew Carnegie.
Eaton used to have a really grand staircase back when the entrance was on that east side of the building that no longer really works. Eaton underwent renovations to create more classroom space, and it now houses the sociology, anthropology, classics, and biology departments, so there's a lot going on there.
The area that now houses the Eaton Computer Lab was added to the building about 30 years later and served initially as a reading room. The architect who designed the addition was Arland A. Derlam, who also designed Carmichael Hall, Jackson Gym, Cohen Auditorium, and Bendetson Hall. In January 2020, a portion of plaster in room 202 of Eaton Hall came loose and fell through the ceiling. According to reporting from the Daily and statements from the university, much of Eaton has remained untouched since it was first constructed in 1908. According to reporting from March 2020, budget constraints have limited the university's ability to undergo the more than 200 classrooms and other spaces that it had said needed renovations over the next 5 years. The last stop on our tour is Blue Hall, which is home to much of the Tufts administration. In Tufts' earliest years, Blue Hall was the college, housing students, administration, the library, and classrooms all under the same roof. Ballou Hall is named after Hosea Ballou, Tufts' first president.
He never actually expected to be its president. He was probably the second choice for Tufts' first president, and was very hesitant to come on board at first. Another fun fact, he didn't actually want Tufts to be at this location. He thought it was too close to Harvard and that we would constantly be compared, but this land here was given for the explicit purpose of housing a universalist institution by Charles Tufts, and they just could not turn down this much land. Ballou took 2 years to travel around and figure out how to actually run a college, because he had no experience in this. I find it interesting that the first place he visited to do this is Harvard.
If you'd like to learn more about the history of different Tufts buildings, view the Tufts Daily's coverage within the Features section. For this segment, we used reporting from Kayla Butera's article on Carmichael Hall and Ara Navetta's piece on Ballou Hall. You can also check out the concise encyclopedia on Tufts history at Tufts Digital Collections and Archives. For The Rewind, I'm Ryan Schaefer.
And that's it for this April 11th edition of The Rewind. I've been your host, Robert Kaplan. Tune in next week for more stories from the Tufts Daily.
The Rewind is brought to you by the Tufts Daily. Today's episode was produced in part by McKenna Law, with reporting by Nicole Garay, Ryan Schaefer, and Ari Navetta. Ryan Schaefer is producer of The Rewind. Kate Seckler selects our music. Our host is Robert Kaplan, and Hannah Harris is the executive audio producer. I'm Sylvia Wang, reporter for The Rewind. Thank you for listening.